I'm Lynn Neary in for Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. For the next 6 months, NPR is looking at many of the fictional characters that have defined American life, from cartoons, movies, television, and more, in a series called In Character.
What's up, Doc?
Fiddle-dee-dee. Wah, wah, wah.
Are you still there?
I really don't know why you're here, Mr. Grant.
C is for Kooky. That's good enough for me.
I am your father.
Today, we're bringing you some characters from the world of advertising. Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, and Chiquita Banana. Their names are practically synonymous with foods we've had on our tables since childhood. They're also full of cultural meaning, perpetuating and occasionally reinventing the stereotypes of people of color in your kitchen. Last week, before Michelle Martin headed down to South Carolina, she talked about these characters with two people who know a lot about this part of advertising's history. Patricia Turner is Vice Provost of Undergraduate Studies at UC Davis and a Professor of African American Studies. Myra Mendiblay is a Professor of English and Interdisciplinary Studies at Florida Gulf Coast University. Michelle led things off with a look back at one of the most familiar ads.
Now, when you think of pancakes, few characters come to mind, I think, as readily as Aunt Jemima.
Aunt Jemima!
I wish I was the one that's gotten old and done, not forgotten of the way,
Smiling, happy Aunt Jemima, famous for her secret recipe, pancakes, waffles, and buckwheat. What's your happy thought for today?
Well, Mr. Lyon, folks says you can't buy happiness, but you can earn it.
Yes, Aunt Jemima, and I guess we all want to be happy.
I guess we do. Patricia Turner, how did Aunt Jemima come to be?
Aunt Jemima has her roots really in the minstrel era of the 19th century, when dancing, happy slaves were depicted on the stage, usually by whites in blackface. And it was so popular that when advertisers at the end of the 19th century were looking for an icon for what was then a new convenience food, my students find it hard to believe that pancake mix qualifies as a convenience food, but they thought that they could latch on to this image of the mammy, and they hired a former slave to flop pancakes at a World's Fair where they were hoping to sell the mix to grocery store chains.
And clearly that image persisted in that form for quite some time. I mean, the commercial we just played was from, I think, the 1940s. It's just interesting to me that there wasn't a resistance to that before then, or maybe it shouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, that was a very familiar image. It was less derogatory in some ways than another kind of image of black women as very slovenly and ill-kept and unable to take care of themselves. There were in pockets of the black community resistance to these images, but it really wasn't until the civil rights movement that they were revisited.
Does Aunt Jemima have the same, what's the word I'm looking for, sort of sting to African Americans as Uncle Tom does?
I think Uncle Tom, and I think for the wrong reasons, has more of a sting than Aunt Jemima. And I think it really depends, Michelle, on what time period you're talking about. You look at Aunt Jemima today, there's no calico. She's not as overweight as she used to be. But if you look at her in my grandmother's time, if you look at the way in which the company imagined her then with what was called a head rag on, great big toothy grin, very much overweight. That was one of the only images of black women that were available to young people at that time. As I say, there was some resistance and dissatisfaction around that.
As you point out, Aunt Jemima has had several makeovers through the decades. What form is she in now?
I think that what the company is going for is the black Betty Crocker look, you know, that she could be a professional, perhaps someone even with a degree in food science or home economics, who has been in a laboratory crafting the perfect breakfast products for consumers, as opposed to the much older image that this was her own special secret recipe that she came up with for the masa and the little children.
I think people probably don't remember this, but Aunt is controversial because there was resistance to giving people the dignified title of Miss or Mrs. So aunt was an honorific, right? Instead of calling somebody Miss Jemima.
It was sort of a continuum. So that at one end you would have, you know, small white children able to call an elderly black man, maybe a minister, by his first name. The next step on the continuum would be some degree of dignity that might come with the aunt or the uncle. And then the final bestowing of dignity would be if he had any title at all, or if he was called Mr. or Mrs. or Reverend or Doctor or whatever. So that aunt or uncle was in some circles actually considered to be a better way of addressing an older person, at least, than the first name, which was not really that uncommon.
And when talking with your students now, how do they see Aunt Jemima?
It's very dependent upon their families. If their families have given them some kind of context for what Aunt Jemima used to look like, and the clip that you played is perfect for those days, then my students do have some ambivalence about the image. There are other students who are unfamiliar with that past, who are unfamiliar with that history with Aunt Jemima. You know, from pancakes to politicians, there's no one black perspective on anything.
Well, that's certainly true. Let's move on to our next character. Now, some members of our audience might not remember the voice, but the jingle has to be one of the most famous. Let's hear it.
I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say bananas have to ripen in a certain way, and when they're flecked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas taste the best and are the best for you. You can put them in a salad. Grief? No, not yet, my dear. That greenish way you're looking means that you are ripe for cooking.
How about me?
No, no. When you are fully ripe, my dear, those little flecks of brown appear.
Me?
You're most digestible, my friend. Delicious, too, from end to end.
Delicious from end to end. Chiquita's almost a synonymous with bananas, I would think, since, what, 1944? Myra Mendible, can you tell us the inspiration for Chiquita? How did she come about?
Well, she was first created in 1944. She was drawn by the same artist who did the Campbell Soup Kids. And we can look at the broader situation in which she was created, and that is the FDR's good neighbor policy. There was a real desire to kind of provide new images of Latin America that would be friendly images, that would show Latin Americans as happy people, you know, as a harmonious place, as good neighbors for the United States, especially during the war effort. And so Chiquita Banana really fit right in with that. You had the female figure who was attractive, you know, who would dance and sing and provide a kind of friendly face, not only for relationships between Latin America and the United States, but also corporate relationships, because Chiquita Banana had a long history and in many ways a very negative history in Central America.
Tell me.
Well, Chiquita Banana really was engaged in numerous practices that were somewhat questionable. Ultimately, they were caught for tax evasion and bribery and other such things. And even recently, they were just fined $25 million for paying terrorists, basically, for security protection in Colombia. So there have been this long history of, you know, not seeing in Central America, not seeing Chiquita Banana as a company that was treating the workers fairly, and you know, also the use of pesticides. There are numerous things that came up throughout their history.
This is Tell Me More, and I'm Michelle Martin, and we're talking about Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, and Chiquita Banana with Professors Myra Mendible and Patricia Turner. As a proxy for an ethnic group, how do you experience it? Because, I mean, it doesn't have some of the things you would be expecting from that era, not a heavy accent, you know, not overly sexualized or any of the other sort of stereotypes that I think, you know, Latinas and Latino men have had to sort of live with. But how do people experience Chiquita Banana as perhaps the, you know, a proxy for a region or for a group of folks?
Well, first of all, I mean, there have been changes. When she first came out, first of all, she was a banana. Then she actually is depicted as a banana until 1987.
Okay, that's a good point. I should mention that the advertisement that we heard, she is a dancing banana.
Yeah, because later she becomes a female. But even during that time, even in the 1940s, they actually did hire Latinas who would represent Chiquita Banana at different functions and in personal appearances. But really what this plays up to is some of the stereotypes that had been with Latinas for a very long time, and that is, you say they're not sexualized, but if you notice the outfit of the Chiquita Banana for the time, you know, she is topless and she is wearing a kind of low-cut skirt. So,
well, I got to be honest with you, because what I was looking at was the banana. So I really didn't see her as having much of an outfit. But
right. Well, right.
But I see when she took human form, she got a little more risque.
Right.
See. Okay.
And, you know, just this image of the dancing, kind of frivolous, apolitical female, not only does it kind of go along with many of the stereotypes of the, you know, the hot Latin woman who just loves to dance and sing and doesn't have a serious thought in her brain, that it goes along with that. But I think it also goes along with the idea of the woman as kind of representative of the nation, and in this case, the continent of Latin America or of South America, where, you know, women are welcoming, you know, there's the bounty of resources that are available, and, you know, and I think that that's the kind of stereotype that it really perpetuates.
We still have one more character to introduce.
Uncle Ben's new recipe, chili con carne, for when you fancy a Mexican for dinner. Invite the world to dinner with Uncle Ben's sauces.
Well, there's a lot going on there, but let's start at the beginning. Uncle Ben has recently had a marketing makeover. He was always a silent image, the kindly smiling servant with a bow tie. And the conceit now, Patricia Turner, is that he's the chairman of the company.
He's moved on up.
So where did Uncle Ben come from, Patricia Turner?
He's a later incarnation than Aunt Jemima. We get this figure with this product in the 1940s, but it's based on the image of the smiling black male domestic servant in a nice uniform, either a hotel maitre d', in a household, wealthy households that could afford butlers, or the image of the porters that was really prominent from the railroad cars in the first class cars. There were figures that looked very much like Uncle Ben, men who looked very much like Uncle Ben, who took care of the first-class customers. And all of those images are what's being worked on with Uncle Ben.
How do you think that Uncle Ben's promotion is going over with consumers? Do you think, again, sort of asking your students, do they know that he's chairman of the board now? Chairman of the company?
I'm not sure that was a marketing strategy that worked really well for the company. I don't know that there's a great deal of familiarity with the shift or with the change. A lot of people have heard more about it from news stories about the change rather than the actual advertisements. So it may not be doing everything for the company that they hoped.
I wanted to ask each of you how you think students who are not from the backgrounds represented by these brands react when people discuss them in the way that you are. Like Myra, for example, students when you grew up with Chiquita Banana and might have heard the jingle, think it's kind of cute. And when you point out that this is actually, you know, you're not in love with it. Mm-hmm. How do people feel about it?
They often will be very defensive about it. I mean, we cherish some of these little icons. We grow up with them. You know, Donald Duck's parrot pal, Jose. You know, he's a dimwit, but he's cute, and so we enjoy it. Or the Frito Bandito or the Chiquita Banana. These are all icons that give us a kind of comforting sense of the world, you know, all these friendly little creatures that are there to serve us and to provide us with sustenance and good things to eat. So I think a lot of people are very defensive if you say that there's any negative implications to the repeated uses of these stereotypes.
Do you think, Patricia, that, for example, people still draw conclusions about ethnic groups from these advertising symbols? For example, do you think your students who are not African American draw conclusions about the happiness of African Americans to serve based on these icons of advertising?
I think that contemporary students are getting advertising with African Americans included in it in multiple products in multiple kinds of ways. So it's very different for a student in 2008 than a student in 1988 or 1978. and two students in 2008. You know, remember, they're born, you know, if we're talking about freshmen born 18 years ago. I mean, Bill Cosby was already in reruns by then. So they've grown up in a very different world. And I would add to Myra's point, which I completely agree with about the defensiveness, when you talk about the time periods in which these were the only images of people of color that were out there, our students sort of act as though that was, you know, simultaneous with the Peloponnesian Wars or something. That was so long ago to them. The 1940s just is ancient history. And you really have to do a lot of work in what we write and in the classroom and the way we talk about this to let them know, you know, your peers, parents and grandparents grew up in this world. This isn't as old as you think, and this is very, very real for them.
If each of you could pick another made-up character out of American life to know more about, who would it be?
You know, the first thing that came to my mind, and maybe I misinterpreted your question, is who I wish people knew more about, and we've already talked about it, is Uncle Tom. I think he's one of the most misunderstood characters in American literature, and I think that the slur that is Uncle Tom really misrepresents what's going on in the novel, and I'm not meaning to particularly defend Harriet Beecher Stowe, but it's just so interesting to me how this whole slur developed.
Myra?
Well, I think that people should know more about the Frito Bandito character. They should know a little bit about the roots of that image of the bandit, and to recognize that it had certain political implications and refers to historical events. And I think that it still shapes some of the attitudes towards Mexican Americans in America today.
Myra Mendible is a professor of English and Interdisciplinary Studies at Florida Gulf Coast University. She joined us by phone from her office. We were also joined by Patricia Turner. She's Vice Provost of Undergraduate Studies at UC Davis and a professor of African American Studies. And she joined us from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, California. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. This has been fun.
And our thanks to Michelle Martin, who conducted that interview last week before her trip down to South Carolina. Perhaps you've heard in-character segments on other NPR programs and have an idea of your own. Well, now's your chance to tell us what great American characters inspire you. Nominate your favorites on our in-character blog. We may put your suggestion on the radio. Go to npr.org/tellmemore for a link to the in-character series.